As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to the 3-0 show, part of the Athletic Baseball Show. It is Thursday, August 24th. The gang is all here. Derek Van Riper, Eno Saris, Britt Jaroli. Not the most fun day to talk baseball, unfortunately. We learned overnight Wednesday into Thursday, Shohei Ohtani has a torn UCL in his pitching arm. There is a ton of short-term and long-term impact here that we're going to dig into. This really kind of bumped a few other things that we're going to get to later in the episode down quite a bit. The White Sox made some pretty big changes that ordinarily would have been enough to lead off the show, but unfortunately, we're beginning with this Ohtani injury. What we know so far, the impact for 2023, no more pitching this season for Ohtani. The grade of the tear is unknown at this time. We're recording midday Thursday. We could have more on that by the end of the week. And we did see Ohtani DH in the nightcap of a doubleheader. It was the matinee that he left early with the arm injury. So there are a ton of ways this can go. And there's impacts on his free agency that we're going to get to. There are questions about the long-term viability of trying to do both of these things. If he doesn't need Tommy John right now, it's going to be a lingering concern for the foreseeable future. So, you know, I'll start with you on this one. Like, where do we begin in starting to dissect the next steps, right? Once we get that extra information, do you think it's reasonable that Ohtani will continue playing through the end of this season, even if he needs surgery? Clearly, he can still hit with how his elbow feels right now, but do you think it's an actual thing he'll try to do with free agency around the corner?
I mean, I think there's some question of legacy and how likely he thinks he could reach some personal benchmarks. I know the game is supposed to be played for the team, but the team at this point, I think by putting Trout on the IL and with this news, I think the team is kind of saying, you know, I don't know we're going to make the playoffs this year. But at 44 homers with a month to go, you know, he's projected to hit 55. What if he could hit 62? Does he want to stick around to try and do that? Knowing that if he does have surgery, he's going to miss all next year for pitching and probably at least 2 months for hitting if we take sort of the Bryce Harper recovery timeline and give it to him. So knowing that he's going to miss some time, you know, both sides of the ball next year, you know, does he want to go for 62 homers or whatever numbers he wants there? And I would actually think, because if he gets the surgery earlier, he might be able to hit earlier next season. I would assume that if surgery is recommended, he will shut it down and have surgery.
Yeah, I think that's pretty logical. And Britt, I mean, we've seen this before from Ohtani. Unfortunately, he had Tommy John surgery in October of 2018. It cost him some time at the beginning of 2019. He didn't pitch at all in 2019, pitched very little in 2020. He was really struggling with his command in a couple of appearances before coming back and getting to 130 in a third innings in 2021. So you do wonder, for a two-way player, even if he makes it back, if it takes him longer to get everything back in place since we have one case for him already.
Yeah, I mean, it could. But here's the thing, guys. We're speculating as if Ohtani is a regular player. Everything he has done has proven that he's not a regular player, right? So if it was a regular pitcher getting a second Tommy John, we'd be talking about timelines and, you know, the fact that, as Eno has mentioned, percentage-wise, it's not really in their favor to come all the way back. And certainly a guy who hits and pitches, there's a danger in what is the timeline, right? But nobody has any idea because nobody has ever seen a guy like Shohei Ohtani be able to do what he's done. And I think a lot of people are saying, well, he may never pitch again. We may never see this again. And that may be true, but right now we don't even know the severity of the tear. We don't even know if this is going to be something where he's just going to have to be shut down for the season and cool it and can rehab and come back, right? So I think this is something that's unfortunate. Just if you like baseball, I think this is something that crazy that Mike Trout goes on the IL and it's just kind of like a throwaway item, right? Because Shohei Ohtani hurts his UCL. But, you know, I think as a sport, this would suck if Ohtani was done being a two-way player because it is the coolest thing we've all seen in our lifetime. So I don't know if it changes the timeline at all. I think there's so much we don't know right now that me sitting here and speculating when we don't know the degree and the nature of the injury exactly and its severity, it is just, it's irresponsible. We just don't know.
I think what we're sitting with right now is a lot of questions about, okay, where will he go in free agency? How long are teams going to be willing to sign him? You know, is it going to be a small fraction of the deal we were expecting? Or is it going to be half as much we were expecting, right? We saw $500 million deals kind of floated out there as a benchmark for what Ohtani was going to get in free agency. That seems a lot less likely right now. But within the range of outcomes, and I think people have looked past this way too much, even if Shohei Ohtani doesn't make it all the way back as a starting pitcher. Let's just say he makes it back as a hitter, can't be a starting pitcher anymore. He could be a reliever, right? That could be on the table. Or he could be an outfielder instead of being a DH. That's within the range of outcomes too. So I think when you start to think about his future, when you think about ways that you could bring him into the organization and still have a million things go right because he's such a phenomenal talent, I think you have to at least consider all of those other outcomes along the way. It's not just the doom and gloom scenario that is on the map here. It's a lot more than that.
Yeah, I think it's really smart to point out also that he could be a position player. He obviously has the physical skills to be, I think, maybe even a center fielder. But asking him to be a center fielder and hit and pitch, I think, would have been too much. We've seen that this has put this is not just the only clue that how hard this has been for him. We're talking about fatigue, cramps all over. He says he's been cramping all over. This is a difficult thing that he's asking his body to do. And so in terms of the going forward, there you have to model out all these different things. And I can't do this for you in real time, but I can sort of use some player comps. I do think that as a DH, he's a little bit more comparable to Xander Bogaerts than Trey Turner. So we just had these mega deals, right? And I don't think as a hitter alone, he has not put up the same value as a, you know, as Tatis showed before he got his big deal or Trey Turner showed before he got his big deal. It's a little bit more like Xander Bogaerts. You're talking about 10 to 15 wins above replacement over the last 3 years. That's where Xander Bogaerts was. Trey Turner was more like 18, you know, it's just, he was an excellent hitter and an excellent shortstop. It's easier to put together the wins above replacement, you know, when you do all the different things. So, you know, I think you start with the Xander Bogaerts deal. You start with $280 million. Now, what would you do if he's a pitcher? You wouldn't give him 10 years. So that's a weird thing. But then you just think, take out the 10 years, what would I give him money-wise as a pitcher? And I think you have to think of names like Walker Buehler and Tyler Glass now, guys. Walker Buehler just had his second Tommy John. If he comes back and pitches well, how much money would you give him? Tyler Glass now, you know, has gotten on the order of $20 and $25 million on short-term deals. What would you give him if he pitched 120, 150 innings, you know, this year or next year? So, you know, I think the answer for that is at least $50 or $60 million. You know what I mean? And probably more like, you know, what you started talking about, Robbie Ray, you know, Kevin Gausman, you're probably talking about like $100 million. So you take that 280, you put the 100 on it, you're at 380. So I think you know, I think it still starts with a four. I'm not sure it gets all the way to five, because a second Tommy John, you know, you have the risk that he never pitches for you again. And even as a reliever, there are some limiting concerns to the manager. Consider that if you want him to close and he's on the base pass on the eighth inning, how do you warm him up? You know, so there are some things that you have to do. Maybe they could have a new rule where they're like, you know, Shohei Ohtani can come off the base pass and go warm up if he wants to, or whatever. I don't know, new pinch runner rule, but whatever it is, you know, there's still some limiting factors that I don't think he could necessarily be your closer. He could be a fireman. He could be a great reliever. I'm not saying he can't be a great reliever, but there are some like, oh, but where is he playing? Where is he right now? Can I warm him up without taking him out of the game, sort of deal? So I think I would settle in around 400, but maybe it gets close to 500, and maybe more teams think that they can get a bargain now, but and get to the table, but I doubt it. I think it still starts with a four, and there's how many teams are capable of putting a $400 million contract out?
All of probably, them. All of them. They just don't want to.
Sorry, I used the wrong word. Not capable. I mean, are willing.
I think more owners are willing to do this with Ohtani than they are with any other player that we've ever seen. I still think that's true, even with this tear in his
marketing
elbow.
Marketing opportunity.
Yeah, the butts in the seats. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it makes your team a global brand, or more of a global brand than it currently is in many, many cases. Think about what Jacob deGrom got. We knew there was a very, very high level of risk with Jacob deGrom's health going into his free agency this winter. He got 5 for $185 from the Rangers as a 34-year-old with a lot of recent arm trouble. So, you know, your baseline for what Ohtani is as a hitter, I think, is a great place to start. The age difference and the skills difference need to be sort of baked in, but I still think you're looking at a massive contract. I think you're also looking at creative solutions. It might be a case where Ohtani says, you know, I want to pick a place that I'm going to be for a couple of years and have an opt-out, and I want some guarantees beyond that in case things physically don't work out. So maybe it's an opt-out after 3 years. Maybe it's as creative or more creative than the contracts that Carlos Correa has been signing in free agency, because there's so many moving parts here, and it may come down to a place where he's comfortable and a front office willing to kind of find something that works for Ohtani and works for no one else, which makes sense just given what he brings to the table. But I think a lot of people are assuming it will be the Dodgers and that his time with the Angels is over. I wonder if, having gone through the Tommy John rehab process before, if he does in fact need a second Tommy John, does familiarity matter more? I don't know if it does, because winning is something Shohei Ohtani wants to do, and winning is something he has been unable to do with the Angels. So this is also a free kick at the can to go to an organization that you believe in if you're unhappy with how things have gone during your time in the big league so far. So to me, it just opens up the door for more teams, because the top number comes down and teams that are willing to be creative. Did anyone think the Minnesota Twins were going to be the long-term home for Carlos Correa back when he first hit free agency? I certainly didn't.
Yeah. I don't know if it gets super creative with short-term deals here. I think they're both looking for records to be set, like big, huge, gaudy, like Eno said. I don't know if the number starts with a five, but I think it's upper fours, because keep in mind, Juan Soto turned down $440 million. Yes, he was younger, but he was also under team control for two of those years. So the big money is still out there. Aaron Judge, 2 years older than Ohtani when he hit free agency, got in the $300 million range. So this, I mean, you have to look at it as he's going to immediately impact your team. Maybe he pitches next year, maybe he doesn't, if he gets Tommy John. But he's going to immediately be able to DH. I actually texted somebody I know who is in the strength and conditioning space for Major League Baseball about, like, hey, is this guy going to be able to, you know, undergo this and just swing like it's no problem? And he said, yeah, absolutely. He said, because it's his right arm and he swings lefty, there's very little stress on that ligament unless he hyperextends his elbow, but they can just brace his arm to prevent that. And he already wears a brace. So no matter what happens here, he's going to be totally fine. This guy said most NFL offensive linemen have no UCLs. They live totally normal lives. So, you know, I do think
totally normal lives.
Totally normal lives. You know, I do, because I was curious, like, huge. Is this a fact that, you know, can this guy undergo this surgery and then be out for next season? And no, he could still hit. It wouldn't be a problem at all, which is so.
Yeah, we have a pretty good use case with Harper, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but Harper really was still sidelined for a little while. His rehab was just quick. Harper didn't. This guy would be able to swing through it because he pitches righty.
Oh, is it because of different elbows too?
Yes. Because he pitches righty, he hits lefty. And so like this guy said, the only risk, very little stress on that elbow, the only risk would be hyperextension, but he already wears a brace that prevents that. So this wouldn't be Harper. Harper, what came back in a couple months, right? This would be Shohei Ohtani in your opening day lineup, which is nuts.
Well, then maybe he actually plays the rest of the season as a hitter because, you know, if he thinks he can get back as a hitter no matter what, you know, after the offseason. Then and he's not going to pitch next season anyway if he gets the surgery.
Right.
That's interesting.
It is interesting.
I also, you know, the comment that you made before the show started, Britt, was also, you know, germane to the idea of like where will he sign and how much will he sign for. He's already shown us to some extent that he does not care about the money, you know, as the number one thing. I mean, he wouldn't have come over to America if you know, when he did, if he cared mostly about money, because he could have made more money in Tokyo, in Japan for a little bit before he came over, and then B, not coming over as part of the, you know, the international bonus pool signing and more as a guy who's a free agent. He could have come over as an international, as just a free agent and made a lot of money. So he has left money on the table before. And, you know, I think ostensibly the choice was Anaheim for winning reasons. You know, Mike Trout, a developing team. I think that's the idea. And so you could look at different teams and say, okay, well, the Dodgers are perennial contenders. That's a headline. I wonder if there's any aspect of him that thinks, which team is going to keep me healthy? And the Dodgers are not that team. I don't know if it's because they have veterans, they signed a lot of people. I don't know what the deal is. You know, Clayton Kershaw is going to make you games missed. But I'm looking at the baseball prospectus games missed. 2023, Dodgers, number one in games missed to the IL. 2022, number five in games missed to the IL. 2021, number five in games missed to the IL. So I'm gathering from this that the Dodgers would be the number one team in games missed to the IL in the last 3 years. And that's going to come up at some point in his thinking process. However, the team that is number one and best at this is the Cleveland Guardians. And I don't know that they figured anything out on keeping people healthy. They just always have a super young team.
Yeah.
They trade people away before they get hurt. All those guys get traded and then they get hurt, you know? So, and also I just don't think the Guardians are going to be the team that drops the $400 million on there. But a team that is that could make a pitch that they are in the bottom five in days missed for similar reasons. It's a very young team, but maybe could come to the table with money. Dark horse, Baltimore Orioles.
Guys, did you see John Angelos' comments this week?
Yeah, that's true.
So
yeah.
What about that makes you think they can't even trade the players they have
on
their team?
I know he said that.
He's an idiot.
But the gap between their current payroll and what they used to do like 4 or 5 years ago is Ohtani level. Like they could fit him in.
I agree. Again, like we said earlier in the show when Derek was saying teams that could pay Ohtani. No. Teams that want
capable
to pay, right? Like
yeah.
I mean, they are dragging out John Angelos right now. They're dragging out re-signing the lease with the Maryland Stadium Authority to play at Camden Yards. They're getting $600 million. Yeah, in stadium renovations. He doesn't want more money. He wants all the land around it. He wants to create like a Atlanta Battery, but there's no land and the parking lots are shared with the Ravens. And there's a parity clause in this agreement that if the Orioles get something that the Ravens don't, the Ravens have to be compensated. So it is just the epitome of
the city's not going to do it.
No, like tripping over his golden shoelaces. Like, you know what I mean? Like just be quiet and sign the lease. You know, they had, I think Forbes ranked them as the fourth most like profitable team in terms of like expenses to revenue. I mean, they just don't have any expenses. Yes, I'm sure Michael Elias would love to add a Shohei Ohtani, but Their owner is talking about how, hey, enjoy it while you can with these young guys. They just got good. And he's like, enjoy it while you can. We can't pay Adley Rushman and Gunnar Henderson. It's like, what? If you're going to be the Braves, why don't you sign them to deals like the Braves?
Why did you say that out loud, too? God.
They all do it, though, at some point. Bob Castellini did it last spring. Where else are you going to go? They can't help themselves.
That's why they don't let him talk anymore.
You just need a person to just stop you. He's like someone who's on your team, works PR for you to say, Mr. Angelos, I think it's in your best interest to not finish that sentence.
Yeah.
And then just stops.
Yeah, this is why owners don't talk. We complain they don't talk, but every time they talk, they say something dumb that's fodder for us. And then we're like, why don't they talk?
Look, Happy Gilmore at the Waterbury Open said to his caddy, why don't you just watch me and make sure I don't do anything stupid? I think John Angelos could learn a lot from Happy Gilmore.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's talk about Mike Trout for a second, right? He's he's hurt again to the wrist injury. He tried to come back. I'm not going to dunk on the Angels for trying while they could with Ohtani and Trout because the window's closing, right? It hasn't worked out. They went all in. They got beat. They're getting beat badly. So that's one thing. What does the future of Mike Trout look like? I look back at the playing time since the start of 2020. Mike Trout has collected 1,248 plate appearances over the last four seasons combined as we enter play on Thursday.
Oh, you got to take 2020 out.
I'm counting it for everybody. I'm not dinging him for 2020. Everybody. I'm just cumulatively just throwing the last four seasons. Fernando Tatis Jr. has more plate appearances than Mike Trout during that same span. Can we ever get Mike Trout all the way back? The best news, I think, for this season is that his back hasn't been the problem. Everybody was worried about the back, and maybe that's still a major long-term concern, but whatever adjustments he made, he talked about it in the second half of last season, seemingly have worked to keep that aspect of his body healthy. But now we're at this point where maybe Ohtani's leaving. Ohtani's definitely got an injury. Trout's 32 years old now. He's there on a massive contract. Anthony Rendon, man, I'm just giving up on Anthony Rendon. He's just not coming back. It's just not going to happen. Like, he might actually be back and play. He's not going to be the Anthony Rendon they signed. Not going to happen. Trout's just stuck right now. Is there a team out there that looks at Mike Trout this winter and says, no, we still believe? Because the numbers when he plays are still great during that span. He's still 50, 60% better than a league average hitter. He's probably better suited to DH a lot more than he does at this stage of his career. But what does the next few years look like for Mike Trout if we're starting to think about life without Shohei Ohtani as a member of the Anaheim Angels? We're all going to go back to wanting Mike Trout to go somewhere else because the chances of that franchise getting better before they get worse seem like they're out the window.
Well, if Artie Moreno sells the team like he was going to and then pulled back on, and Aldo Gonzalez had a great profile at ESPN about that. Maybe that would change the trajectory of how we felt about the Angels long-term. But I think Mike Trout's best years are behind him, unfortunately. I mean, as you mentioned, staying on the field has been tough, really tough. And like, is he a guy, what I've always wondered is how are we going to look back on this guy's career? Are we going to say, oh, what might have been if he had been healthy, if the Angels had been good? Right? Like, is he a guy who you list among the all-time greats? Because he hasn't played as much as a lot of these guys, right? He hasn't won. He hasn't even gone to the playoffs. And so I think to some extent, he's kind of that superstar that we're going to be like, man, I watched him play and man, he just doesn't get enough credit. And this is like 10, 20, 40 years from now, right? Because what is his legacy right now? What is it? Is he
the best player of his generation? Is what he
is. Is he better than Otani?
That comes a loaded argument just because of Otani being a two-way player. But prior to Otani's arrival, I think the fair comps for Trout were, you know, Mickey Mantle. You heard those kinds of comps on Trout, and statistically, he backed it up.
Hasn't he not played as much as Mickey Mantle, though, too?
Now, because of this recent four-year stretch, I would guess that the playing time over the first 11, 12 years of their careers probably favors Mantle. I'd have to look back at that. But 11 All-Star games, 9 Silver Sluggers, 3 MVPs. I mean, this is an amazing talent. And I think sometimes that gets lost. I think we look at the big contracts, we look at the injuries, and we say, this guy doesn't have anything left in the tank. Maybe we're seeing some of that with Giancarlo Stanton with the Yankees. But Trout's peak compared to Stanton's peak, as great as Stanton was earlier in his career, Trout's just in his own stratosphere, right? So he should, health permitting, age better than Stanton has aged to this point. And there should still be a lot of productive years in Trout's bat, theoretically, just based by it on talent, right? So I just wonder, like, how many teams would even be interested? And does Trout want out of Anaheim? He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that's going to cause a fuss about it and publicly put that out there. But would you want to trade for him? If you were a team and you had an owner that was willing to take on that contract, would you want him? I think I would. In most cases, I think there's much more that can go right than can go wrong, even though we're stuck in this 3-year window, especially where a lot has gone wrong.
I don't think I'd want to pay the full number. I just looked at it. It's $248 million for years, you know, 32 through 38 on this guy's ledger. So I wouldn't want to pay the full number, but there is a number that I would want to pay, you know. So if they put $50 million in it or $100 million in, you know, over the next 6 years, that would also change the prospect I'd be willing to give up, right? Like if I had to take on the whole full 250, then I'm not giving up almost anything, you know? It's like you get an A-ball reliever or something. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, do you want to pay 100 of this and I give you something worthwhile for Mike Trout, then yes, I think the answer is yes. I think in terms of legacy, you know, he's already 30th all time in Fangraphs WAR. And he's not done yet, so he's going to go up the list. I think what's been lost in these last 3-4 years has just been the opportunity for him to join the top 15, top 10 of all time. Because if you look at the 6 years he has left on this contract, I doubt he's going to average 5 wins a year. That's like all-star level, and that's he'd have to average that, and he'd have to play all that. If he did do all that, he would be right there with Mickey Mantle. He might be right between Mike Schmidt and Mickey Mantle on the all-time list at, you know, 15, basically tied with like Mel Ott. I don't think he's going to do that. So I think he's going to add another sort of, I don't know, maybe 15 wins all-time and end up closer to Joe Morgan and Eddie Matthews, top 20 all-time. Still awesome. Still a Hall of Famer. And what I would prioritize, in fact, as a player, if I was thinking about my legacy and I was Mike Trout, I think I would prioritize winning. So I don't know that I would publicly demand a trade, but I think I would come at this end of the season and say, hey, can you at least explore this and see who will take it on and what's out there? Because, you know, you did just trade away a lot of the farm. If Shohei's not here, we're not going to be better next year. You know, so, you know, what could we do? Because if he got to the postseason, had a little bit of postseason success, you know, a Mike Schmidt level player all time is right there for him, I think.
Yeah, that's a great point. And watching him in the WBC when they were winning and games did matter.
It was
so fun to watch him. He was so clearly having the time of his life. He said he had the time of his life. And so I agree with you. Like, if there's any way he can get on a winner, close out his career, at least on a team that, listen, if the Angels don't bring back Ohtani, they're going to fade into obscurity very quickly, right? They're going to go from this team that we're like, how aren't they good, to just a team we kind of forget about. And I would love if he was all of a sudden in a playoff push. I mean, the him and Ohtani missing from the postseason cost MLB hundreds of millions of dollars in terms of marketing, especially with Ohtani. So I would love for that guy to finally get a shot, even if it's later in his career, even if it's, hey, he's just the DH at this point. I think Mike Trout really deserves to win. And I didn't know how important that was to him until I watched him this spring at the WBC.
We've made a lot of comparisons on this show to, you know, the Angels and the White Sox. And I think it's organizationally very fair. And we had a listener who, Eno and I were talking about the perfect hitter, the hitters that do everything on rates and barrels. And one of our listeners said, hey, peak Frank Thomas, like that guy was incredible. And I looked back at the numbers and he's a much better player. I knew he was a great player when I was a kid. I think we would have lost our minds over Frank Thomas if he was playing in today's game. Phenomenal talent. Same kind of arc, really, as the stars we've seen in Anaheim, where he did amazing things, had very little opportunity to play in the postseason because of the organization, and just kept going out there and just racking up huge seasons. I bring this up because the White Sox, they made the big changes. A few weeks ago, we said, what do White Sox fans really want? They want change. They want Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn gone. They want a new front office. They want a different group of people to make decisions about this franchise and change the trajectory of their immediate future. And White Sox fans got at least the first part of what they want. They saw Jerry Reinsdorf part ways with Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn this week, but it sounds like they're promoting from within, with Chris Getz possibly taking over as the GM and former Royals GM Dayton Moore possibly coming in for a front office role. So a lot of this comes back to some of the things that you brought up with the Angels, Britt. It's like, if Artie Moreno's still there, does it matter what the Angels do otherwise? Like, Artie's the problem. He's the common denominator. He's the reason why the franchise has been spinning its tires as much as it has for 20 years. Jerry Reinsdorf and the White Sox at least have that one World Series back in 05 to show for it, right? Stole that one World Series along the way. And here we are with like maybe more of the same, but at least something different. Is this good? Is this a good step for the White Sox, or is it just same day, different storm?
I think it's good that Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn, who were there for 30 and 20-ish years, are gone, right? You can't win one World Series in 2005 and then not a single playoff series after that and continue to keep your job, especially this year. Like, just a massive train wreck. Guys talking about the clubhouse culture, a failure on so many levels. Obviously in Chicago on Reinsdorf, the whole book has been that he's a loyal owner, but this shows you that even loyalty has its limits. So I think them being gone is good. Now, as you said, DVR, who are you hiring, though? Is it this more of the same? Because internally promoting and then adding Dayton Moore, is that the shakeup that we wanted? I don't really think so. But the most interesting part about this whole thing, I thought, was that the end of the press release said they're going to have somebody new in place by the end of the season. Why? Why would you, like, if you're going to, for the first time in 30 years, have somebody different in charge of baseball operations, why not wait until everyone's available this winter and then actually conduct a real interview? This felt like Jerry getting rid of one guy that he really liked to bring in another person that he has a relationship with, right? So you're right. The common denominator here is Jerry. I don't know why. This doesn't seem like a process where they're going to interview candidates. It sounds like he already knows who's going to take the job. So are they better off? Slightly. But to me, this is such a great opportunity to wait till the winter and canvass all of these big league clubs. And they just don't seem like they're interested in doing that.
Yeah, by the end of the season means anybody who whose their contract is up at the end of the season is not on the list. it doesn't sound like an extensive search. And then the names that dropped, I was perplexed. I don't know why. I mean, John Daniels, yes, there's actually a lot to say for John Daniels. He built a lot of what's happening right now in Texas. That's good. But he also had, by his own admission, one of the issues was that he had a lot of loyalty to his coaches, his player development staff, and wouldn't fire people. You can't bring John Daniels into Chicago and ask him to fire people. You know, it's just not in his best nature, I don't think. And then Dayton Moore, yes, he had some success with the Royals, and I don't want to, you know, take away from that. But in terms of today's game, the way it's being played right now, he has not shown capability to do great. And then to promote from within, well, these guys were part of the problem, right? Unless you thought that no one was listening to Chris Getz, and, you know, then that was a problem too. So you're just going to promote the guy no one was listening to? So the whole list of potential candidates for the job really spoke to the problem that is Jerry Reinsdorf, I think. And he does seem like a meddler, because otherwise I'm looking at, like, you know, the roster. They might have, even if you just use this year's payroll or as a guideline, or 2022's payroll as a guideline for what they could spend, they'll have $50 to $60 million to spend in the offseason if they want to. They will actually have a bit of a core. I mean, with Luis Robert in center, and Andrew Vaughn, at first, and Dylan Cease as a starting pitcher, and, you know, some pieces in the bullpen and pieces here and there, like they've got some interesting players. And, you know, I think a smart offseason plan could get them back into a terrible division. I mean, Eloy's still there. There's still a good team here. $60 million could get you somewhere. You're still going to have to find, if you don't pick up Tim Anderson's option, a starting shortstop, you're going to have to find a starting catcher. You're going to have to find another starting pitcher. You're going to have to do all that to sort of get back to where you were. And then you have to find out a way to be better going forward. And a lot of that's going to have to do with their player development. That's a 3-4 year project. So I don't know how much upside this job actually has, especially given the meddling owner. That's something that I know that general manager candidates I've talked to in the past have said ownership is a huge deal for them, because that's who they have to interact with. Are they going to be putting the finger and making me sign Albert Pujols to this long-term deal? Are they going to make me do these things?
Yeah.
Are they going to give me the resources I want in the minor leagues where it's not obvious what the return will be? Are they going to say, yes, you can have $50 million to improve the minor league system over the next 3-4 years, and we won't know if it's working until 3-4 years from now? They're going to have that kind of patience, and I don't get that from Reinsdorf and Angelos and Moreno.
I do think Reinsdorf is a little bit different, though, because of that loyalty element. We talk about the Angels burning through GMs as fast as they do. I think in the time since Kenny Williams was at the head of baseball operations for the White Sox, the Angels have burned through at least 4 different GMs. Like, there's some of the Bill Snowman era that overlaps that, Tony Regans, Jerry DePoto, Billy Epler, and now Perry. And it's been 2 people that have had control of the White Sox for most of that window.
Is that because of the World Series, though?
Maybe.
No, I think it's just how he is. He does the same thing with the Bulls.
Just waiting it out and waiting it out and waiting it out. Baseball takes time, right? So if you're trying to find a big market where you don't have intense pressure on you compared to New York, I think expectations for the White Sox are always lower. And you might have time if you do this the right way. I actually think this is a pretty good job. I think compared to the heat you're going to get, if you were someone who could take one of the jobs in New York, this may have some pros that those New York jobs don't have. The way we've started to frame this when we first started talking about it was, which organization is more desirable if the president of baseball operations position, or the highest title in baseball operations, whatever it actually is in each org, if those are available for the Yankees versus the Mets today, where would you actually want to be? How much does the difference between Steve Cohen and Hal Steinbrenner shape your job and your organization and the work you get to do? Is it clear within the game that the best candidates for those jobs prefer one of those franchises to the other? Because I can't think of a time in the last 25 years where most people would have said, that's actually a toss-up. I think it was overwhelmingly the Yankees until recently. But things have changed with Steve Cohen being willing to spend a lot. So, Britt, I'll throw this to you first. You spend a lot of time talking New York baseball. What's the sense around the game as far as which organization is the better one to be in charge of right now?
Oh, I think it's the Mets. I don't think it's close. Because you look at Hal Steinbrenner, and he's not George. They've very quietly been very cheap when it comes to things. Yeah, they re-signed Aaron Judge, but look at the depth on that roster, right? They just haven't done that great of a job. And I don't know if certainly Hal Steinbrenner isn't George. He doesn't care about winning at the expense of anything, right? They haven't been this like big bully Yankee team in a really long time. And the Mets were that. And yes, it went poorly. But Steve Cohen, instead of going and saying, we have to win at all costs, dismantled them at the trade deadline, paid more money to get prospects, and is on record saying, I know this is going to take a while. So, you know, I think I would rather be in a situation where I'm reporting to Steve Cohen than Hal Steinbrenner. I also think it's important, in my opinion anyway, when you're dealing with billionaires, I would much rather deal with the self-made billionaire than the son, than the guy who inherited the team, right? Than the John Angeloses of the world, the Hal Steinbrenner of the world. Give me Steve Cohen, who turned, like, whether you like him or don't like him, the guy has certain personality traits that made him a billionaire, right? That made him one of the richest people in the world. So to me, I'd rather level up and talk to and work for a guy like that, who no doubt maybe appreciates things a little bit differently than somebody who just, you know, is on third base, you know, born on third and think they hit a triple, right? Like I personally would rather work for that first generation wealth, because it always gets messy. You get into the second and third generations that really didn't do anything except they were born in the right family. So I mean, it's not close.
Ah, that's interesting. My perspective is it wasn't close the other way.
It's still better to be at the helm for the Yankees.
Well, just for me, the Yankees are a global brand, so you just have all this money coming in from global like sales. Their attendance is so strong. It's always top three in the league. You know, they're 40,000 a night. You know, year in and year out. They've already spent the money that the Mets are trying to spend right now to increase their player development. The Mets, built a pitching lab. The Yankees have had one. You know what I mean? Like, the Mets are trying to build a culture of player development. The Yankees have had one. And I know it hasn't quite filtered all the way up to the top, but I see it. I see the Yankees as, like a mid-career veteran starting pitcher where you're like, ooh, let's bring him over here and let's feature the slider a little bit more. You know, like a little tweak. Let's feature the slide a little bit more, or let's have him do this, or let's put him on a weighted ball program. He's never done that. You know, like I see them as like, just on the cusp and just need a little bit of tweaking, a little bit of a change to organizational philosophy. You don't need to fire all their coaches. They have good coaches. Their teams in the minor leagues do well. Their hitters are like number three in exit velocity and barrels, and number two in swing decisions. Like, they're doing some stuff right. It's just a little bit of roster construction, and they've averaged $250 million a year for the last 3 years in terms of payroll. So, he's going to give me enough money to succeed, I think. I did not think necessarily about, I don't think I've been in the room with Steve Cohen and Hal Steinbrenner. So I didn't think so much about the soft skills, the sort of interactions there. It's an interesting way to think about it. But in terms of like resources and stature, and this is a guy who, when I moved to New York, I became a Mets fan in 2002. So it pains me to say it. I still think I lean Yankee.
Well, yeah, and the other aspects of this too is like, how likely is it that you're going to win right away next year, in these next couple of years?
Yeah.
You're in that position. You want to win rings now. You don't want to think about rings 4 or 5 years from now, because if it's a bumpy road to get there, you may lose the job before you actually get that payoff. I think the spending is like 1A and 1B. Cohen might outspend Hal Steinbrenner, but you can't outspend your problems on the big league roster. I think we've learned that over the past decade. You can spend a ton on payroll and it doesn't always work out. The Yankees have never been lower than sixth in payroll league-wide. Usually they're in the top three. That's been consistent the last 3 years especially. This is per COTS. So I think Eno might have the edge as far as like the thing that might differentiate the two right now is the things that are happening in player development. But that gap, I don't think the Mets are bad at player development. Like, there's some organizations that are truly bad at it. The Mets might be closer to average right now.
and they're trying. I mean, they're definitely, that's where a lot of the resources that we don't see, the Mets are spending, that they're spending it down there.
Right. I think
there's,
you can,
a great piece, Tim Britton and Will Salmon have a great two-parter on this that you can just get a little bit of an inkling. They won't give you a ton of specifics because nobody wants to give away their secrets in player development, but like, you can see that there's investiture happening.
Yeah, and I think every team's like that. You know, the Brewers have a pitching lab. No one's allowed inside.
Yeah, I asked to see it, and they're like, there it is.
Yeah, it's over there. You're not getting in.
Yeah. It's so interesting, though, guys, that this question got posed to me the other day. Who has the better record to end the season, the Mets or the Yankees? And it's a toss-up. I know.
You know, you want to take that one first? I'm hemming and hawing a little bit. Yankees. I think the Mets are more committed to the tank. The Yankees are a little more in let's try to save some face.
They're running Rafael Ortega out there.
Yeah.
I mean, the Yankees are bad.
I'm not being mean to Rafael Ortega. I'm just saying they're running kind of like 30-year-old, you know, minor league free agents out there right now.
Slight edge Yankees, but no one's happy that they're in this conversation.
Yeah.
So, okay. So there's no world thinking about that. You're on different sides of the Mets versus Yankees. I think I'm slightly on the Yankees side of this, but I think Britt's point about, I'd want to really know Hal Steinbrenner better. I'd want to find a way to get a good read on how much I trust him and how much he's willing to let me run the baseball operations and how much he's going to meddle. If he's not going to meddle, I think it would still be edge Yankees. Neither one of you thinks the White Sox job is better than the New York jobs, right? I just want to clarify that. You're in the Central instead of the East. Less money to spend because the spending fluctuates. That's as loyal as Jerry Reinsdorf is. His payroll fluctuates a ton. You might be the team that spends the most in the AL Central most years, and you've got one of the easier divisions in baseball to play in most years. Those are good things. Less pressure, good things. Organizational talent is the other part of this question. Which core do you like better right now? Eno mentioned, you know, they got a few nice pieces for the long haul for the White Sox. If they're not going to push toward the future and trade those guys, they're going to build around the likes of Luis Robert. They're going to build around Vaughn. They're going to build around Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease. I could understand doing that given the division they're in, but are the Mets with some of their young guys in better shape than the White Sox? Are the Yankees having the older core but having Judge and Cole as a part of that? Are they just a notch above both of these teams right now as far as the short-term turnaround appeal goes?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. My issue with the White Sox isn't the player and the talent. It's the organization and the development. Like Eno said, some people are good at development, some people aren't. We haven't really seen the White Sox have a whole lot of like feathers in their cap with development. We haven't seen guys go there and get better. We haven't seen late rounders come up and discover something, right? So on paper, if you just gave me these and said, you know, we're not telling you who runs these teams, I think you can make the case that the White Sox talent-wise are in a pretty good spot. That's why this was supposed to be their competitive window right now. That's what makes this year so disappointing. But I have no faith in their development. It's like the Nationals. I think there's a lot of good things going on right there right now. But in order for them to take that jump and become, you know, graduate from the rebuild, they have to develop. I don't know if they're going to be able to develop. So if you look at who's in the best position right now, core-wise, are we thinking that Pete Alonso stays with the Mets? Because that can kind of sway things too, right? If they trade him this winter, are they really saying, hey, we're not going to be good next year, maybe 2 years, right? Maybe three. But the Mets have actually had that trio of young guys, you know, they called them the kids, who were pretty good and pretty fun to watch in short sample sizes. You know, I really like Alvarez too. So I think I like the Mets' current core. If we're not like, are we we're counting Garrett Cole because he's around for so long as the core?
Yeah, Judge is part of that core too. Long-term deal. He's there for the foreseeable
future. Okay, then you have to go with the Yankees. As long as those guys are healthy, then you have to, I think I have to go with the Yankees. I mean, if we're talking about like young players who they're trying to build around, I think the Mets have done a better job with their young players. The Yankees have kind of not had guys really step up the way they wanted. And I think I've maybe overvalued their young guys at times to their own detriment. Remember the baby bombers, right? Like what a disaster that whole thing was. So anyway, that's my long-winded way of saying the Yankees right now, if we're including those two guys, the White Sox, if I had any faith in player development, which by the way, I would burn the whole White Sox operation to the ground. I'm sure there's good people there, but I would burn the whole thing to the ground. Doesn't sound like they're doing.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, if Chris Getz ends up getting that job, they bring in Dayton Moore, but then they also go to a team that does develop talent really well and find someone in that organization to take over player development, that would actually mean something, right? Because that's a big part of their problem. They don't replenish well enough from within. That's been a shortcoming of that organization for a long time. Britt, if I'm not mistaken, Mike Rizzo's contract is up at the end of the season, right? He has not agreed to an extension yet. I mean, Nats versus White Sox, I think, is another one where you'd look at those two organizations and say, if you're choosing between those two jobs, which one's better?
White Sox.
The Nats ran top 10 payrolls every year between 2017 and 2021 before they started tearing it down. Is there an appetite for spending
again? What do you think the Masson situation, what the impact is, Britt?
Wow, I'm getting like two questions at once here. the Masson situation matters a lot. The learners are basically writing checks out of their personal account right now.
Yeah, they're probably not enjoying that.
Yeah, because they don't get the TV revenue that other teams are getting. So that's hurt their sale too. They don't want to sell the team and get what they don't think is right because they don't have that TV revenue. But if you're a potential buyer, why you buy a team that doesn't have that revenue? So we can make the case that the TV revenue is going to change soon anyway. The whole model is going to get blown up.
It's crumbling for a lot of teams already.
Yes. So that is fair. For Mike Rizzo, it's not a question at all. Chicago is his dream job. He's from there. His dad scouted there. He knows Jerry and that family very well. Mm. But here is what I have heard is one of the main
problems. Poor fit for what I would want, though, because he's not super analytically oriented. And I don't know.
Yeah. Their player development hasn't been great. Yeah, if you surround
but
yourself with analytics.
Their player development hasn't been great either. Why would you take the Nationals?
Yeah. Correct. But my main issue with Chicago, what I had heard is like one of the bigger problems. And this is why the internal promotion is what they do, is everything is the White Sox way there. Everything is, you come from this organization. They don't like outsiders. Everything is White Sox, White Sox, White Sox, right? Kenny Williams played for the White Sox. He was there for 30 years. Rick Hahn was there for 20 years. Like, you don't see their top people being poached and go to other organizations, right? You also don't see other organizations going to the White Sox. They like it that way. As loyal as Jerry is, he also wants everything. You know, are you in this organization? Are you in this family for life? So that is why they're not going to go get someone to shake the tree. They're just going to promote somebody else whose name is not Kenny Williams and say, hey, look, we made a change without really making that fundamental change. So I think the biggest issue is that thinking of like the White Sox way. Well, the White Sox way didn't go well. So why not just do what every other team does, which is hire the teams smarter than you. Look at someone who is better and get one of their top or two or three guys, right? Isn't this why Cleveland and Tampa get pillaged, right? That's because that's why what other teams do. So the bigger problem and why Mike Rizzo wouldn't be a candidate is he's not far. He is by extension because his dad was there for, his late father was there for years and years. But it's all about the White Sox way, the White Sox family, the White Sox for life. If you're an outsider, if you were with another organization, somebody in that front office told me, you are treated. You're ostracized to some degree. You are in the minority, which is so weird, isn't it? And archaic.
That is very strange. And maybe not as surprising given some of the things we heard about clubhouse culture. Maybe there's some front office culture issues as well. Just as far as blending in new talent, that's staleness right there across the board. But that Nats job, it's not a bad job because of the Juan Soto trade, especially. That replenished a farm system that was in really bad shape, and they've had a lot of success with players from that deal taking pretty big steps forward this year, having Dylan Cruz in the organization now. That guy's going to get to the big leagues fast. He's probably an impact player from the jump when he gets there too. The NL East is tough because of the Mets' longer term ambitions and the way Atlanta's built right now, and Philly obviously being really strong, but there's only two easy divisions in baseball, so that's just life. That's life in the league right now. I don't think that's a bad job at all. So it'd be weird if Mike Rizzo left. I wonder how much they would try to shake things up in terms of philosophy there. If they would look for someone with a similar amount of experience, or if they would actually change course completely and look to that kind of younger group of front office folks.
Yeah, and that would depend also on who's running the team, right? That's also another issue. Like, someone asked me, is extending Davey Martinez and trying, they're in active negotiations with Mike Rizzo, who I'm sure is using the Chicago job as a way to bump up his leverage to some extent, whether or not he's factored into the White Sox job. It would be the prudent thing to do. But I think part of why they wanted to keep these guys around is they at least acknowledge they need some stability right now. The team is playing well, and they're not sure what's going to happen up top. So if you're a GM candidate, would you want that job, not knowing who your boss is going to be, not knowing how long the learners are going to be in charge? That adds a certain, that adds a real sticky layer, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you want to know who the boss is going to be, and that could change seemingly at any time if the right buyer comes along, right? Like, that's, it's been kind of pending almost since last fall. It's been about a year now since we learned that that team was actually available. Any other thoughts before we go? It's been a strange 24 hours in baseball, to say the least.
Yeah, I'm wondering also how exciting the home stretch will be. It feels like a lot of things are figured out. The biggest question marks are the NL Central and the third wild card in both leagues. And in fact, the third wild card of the American League is looks like a two-team race between Toronto and Seattle. But the NL third wild card race is there's about four teams in there. So that might be the one that ends up being the most exciting down the stretch, where you've got the D-backs, the Reds, the Giants, and
the Padres still technically in it. The Padres
kind of near there, but and the Cubs.
Yeah.
So that'll be exciting, but I was surprised, you know, I was kind of looking through we look through MLB TV and try to choose which game to watch, and I was, you know, I'm trying to be like, because they'll watch any game now, which is kind of a fun point in their fandom. So I'm trying to watch ones with like postseason implications, and it's there's not that many sometimes.
If a random box of Brewers gear shows up on your doorstep, I know nothing about it.
trying to buy their faith. The youngest said that he's a Mariners fan, so you know, I guess we'll put some Mariners games on for him.
The AL West is Seattle? A battle right now. Look what Seattle's done. They've made up ground at a time when the Rangers have been struggling. The Rangers, I think, have lost six in a row entering play now on Thursday. They got swept by the Brewers.
Oh man, I missed that. I had put the Mariners in the wild card race, and they're actually in it for the division. Look at that.
Yeah, I'm kind of pumped about the AL West right now. There's a ton of drama right there. Seeing Seattle play well, possibly making good on Britt's original prediction. That was the hot take prediction.
Yeah, didn't look good early in the season, but they're having a nice run. Also, guys, the more you look at payrolls and what's owed to people, and just like, you know, habits, Seattle is a legitimate Ohtani landing spot, in my opinion.
They have some dark horse, some money, if you will, still in there.
That'd be so fun.
And
I know.
The other thing about Seattle that I discovered this week is they're the only team in baseball who's never been in the World Series.
The only one who's never been. Yeah, I think that's right.
There are teams who've never won.
Yep, there are a handful of teams that have never won.
So let me put forth that if you are looking for a team, your team's out of it, then maybe consider the Mariners with like the hottest person on the planet right now, Julio Rodriguez, is just, you know, killing the ball right now.
Yeah, I wonder how much it helps, you know, thinking about just going somewhere where there's another superstar. Like, that's more fun, right? It's fun to play with other superstars. We saw that in the WBC. We see it in the more loaded teams. I wonder if that's another selling point.
And it's
that
a
matters.
Good pitching staff. So if I have to take a year off, we can still win without me as a pitcher.
A little less pressure in that regard.
Then,
yep.
And after that, I can make it even better, you know, in the future.
And Julio would take a lot of the spotlight off of him in the interview requests and stuff, you would hope, right? You know, Julio likes being a star. I don't know if Ohtani likes being a star.
As someone who's tried to get Ohtani, yes, I don't think he loves that part of the job.
I think he hates that part of the job. That's part of the reason.
Yeah, I think he hates that part.
Like the Angels, like I'm sure what other team signs him is going to have to agree to something similar, like really had to protect him and that he only talks after he starts. So if you want him about anything other than his pitching performance, not happening. So not great.
Not a deal for us, but it makes Shohei Ohtani happy to have things that way. So we are going to go on our way out the door. A reminder, you can get a subscription to The Athletic for $2 a month for the first year at theathletic.com/baseballshow. You can find Britt on Twitter/X at Britt_Giroli. You can find Eno at EnoSaris. You can find me at Derek Van Riper. That's going to do it for this episode of The 3-0 Show. We are back with you on Friday.
Always got the green light here.
Green light 3-0, and she's gone.